Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with the valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your call. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hello, this is All Paws Pet Talk Radio with your host, Deb Wolf. And today we have back for a second time, Healthy Goo, because I want to talk to Steve. Because Steve was just getting to some really cool facts and interesting information that I hadn't really connected before between allergies and behavior and certain breeds, all kinds of stuff that, as he was saying it, I was nodding my head thinking, ooh, this sounds really, really true. So I want to talk to him. We had him on the show. We ran out of time. He's back from Healthy Goo. And I will be talking later in the show to Darlene Arden, doing some dog and cat problem solving for you. We have a whack of problems, a whole page, in fact. So I decided to just do that with her today and try and stay clear of the animal news, although I do want to tell you about the Triple Crown is in sight for a rider who used to ride here near Vancouver, and that's pretty exciting. If this horse wins coming up, third win in a row, that'll make it really, really in a distinguished group of only a few horses. Now, I bet Healthy Goo and other allergy remedies are really in demand by the racehorses and also by your pets, because when your dog is scratching and picking, when your dog goes back and forth to the vet over and over and over for the same ear infection and the same medicines, when every single spring or summer your neighbor's dog picks itself bald, this is something that could be fixed. So, Steve, welcome to the show. Let's talk about that.
Well, Deborah, Goo, hello to you, and thank you again for the invitation to speak with you and your pet listeners.
Oh, it's great to have you. Yes, a gooey hello back. So you've got this stuff that helps pets with allergies, and they eat it, and they like to eat it because it's in peanut butter, and because it's in peanut butter, it goes right into their mouth, right quickly, bypassing other areas of their body, right into their bloodstream. So that's all good. But you were telling me last time, in addition to all this great stuff about Healthy Goo and all the animals it helps, and the ear infections and the scratchy, itchy pets, you were telling me that some dogs have way more problems with allergies than others. And I really wanted to have you back to talk about that.
Yes, thank you again, Deborah. As we have with humans, allergies are very strongly genetically driven. And with regard to our canine population, about 30% of our dogs suffer from the same allergies to pollens, dust mites, and molds that we do. But unfortunately, some of our most popular breeds have a higher percent because they're genetically predisposed to allergies. And unfortunately, at the top of the list is our very favorite retriever group, followed by the Germans, followed by the bullies, and then the terriers.
So that's everybody's dog, really, and all the mutts, too. You know, when I think of hot spots, that horrible problem that many Golden owners and Wheaton owners fight a battle against, every time their dog gets into swimming season and is wet all the time, they get these tiny little pimples or blemishes that start on the neck, usually, and within hours it's the size of the whole neck is barren and raw and oozy and sore, and the dog has a fever, and things are just out of control. And that's an allergy, right?
You're exactly right. Whereas us humans manifest our allergy issues through respiratory congestion and itchy nose and runny eyes, with our dogs it's all about skin and ear issues. And what you're talking about there, hot spots, is again a skin reaction to the allergies. And whereas we bring our allergens into our respiratory through respiratory, our dogs actually absorb them through their skin. And you can imagine that the ears are ultra sensitive to those allergens, and that's what very often creates the gunky ears. And for hot spots, it's a skin irritant leading to itching, leading to open wounds, leading to antibiotic use, which unfortunately are targeting the bad bacteria, but also severely disrupt the good bacteria in the gut. And when you have a gut that's out of microbiome balance, you've got unhealthy status in your animal.
Well, you end up spending a lot treating the symptoms, and your pet's never quite well. And, you know, there are people listening now going, that sounds like my dog. I find, and I don't know if this has scientifically been proven, but I do find that the non-shedding dogs, the dogs that are classified as hypoallergenic, seem to be more sensitive. And that would make sense to me. I don't just mean about particular allergies you've mentioned today, because the ear infection thing is usually the swimmer dogs that I'm fighting it with. The dogs that stick their heads all the way under the water and are also predisposed to it, like you say, the retrievers. But these other non-shedding dogs, it seems like their body has less ways of getting rid of toxins.
Well, when you hear your veterinarian suggest frequent bathing for your animal, if you have an itchy dog, it's because he's suggesting bathing to remove that accumulated layer of offending allergens from the skin so they cannot be absorbed.
Right.
Now, with a thicker skin, thicker haired animal, you can see the propensity of the accumulation to be a little bit higher than with the shorter haired animals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so if people do have these hypoallergenic dogs, it almost goes against your common sense. You would think, oh, they have allergies, shave them close. But actually, they have allergies, let them be furry. So they have some protection between their skin and the outside world. Because a poodle, like a standard poodle with a full coat, is a big, massive, woolly type of thing. I mean, nothing gets through that. As opposed to his shaved-down lamb-type version where his skin is completely exposed.
Well, yes, you do. It varies, and then you introduce the sensitivity of those allergens by the dog itself. So what may appear to be a less amount of allergens is still enough to trigger that itchy, bitey, scratchy. I might also add that very often pet parents move to dogs that are more hypoallergenic for the human allergy dimension. A little bit misguided. Because I come from a background of about 10 years on the human allergy side. And with us human allergy people, it's all about layer upon layer of multiple allergens. And where a dog may be a contributing allergen to the human equation, typically it's dust mites, molds, and cockroaches and the pollens that are the troublemakers. So let's not try to blame our dogs for our allergies or even our cats. It's really an accumulation of a number of sources that all add up to that big sneeze.
Well, and they did some research, and they found that children and babies particularly, who grew up in homes where there were two pets or more, were far less inclined to develop allergies to pets later in life. And so it was kind of a reverse thinking. All of a sudden they realized, you know what, if your kid has asthma or allergies, maybe you ought to have pets with them. And that was a big change about 10 years ago. So I was excited to see that, because a lot of people give away pets because of allergies, and the pet's gone, and like you say, they still have the allergies.
You're exactly right. Again, it's a little bit misguided. Again, going back to my analogy of the snowball rolling down the hill, the same is true for our infants. And actually, allergies begin in the womb and are strongly genetically driven. So as goes mom and dad, go the children. And allergy being a snowball, rolling down the hill, your physician can identify the progression of disease caused by that snowball and actually intervene with immunotherapy to blood test, identify your child's got allergies, then begin to recalibrate the immune system with immunotherapy before it moves to asthma.
Wow. Huh.
And this is,
okay, but
this
healthy
is actually,
goo is what you suggest for dogs. And you buy the stuff, you give it to them, they lick it off your fingers, and right away it enters their immune system, right? It enters their bloodstream?
That's correct. That's exactly right. We're following very similar methodology of delivery neutralization of allergies that are used in humans. Sublingual drops that are placed under the tongue morning and at night. And with doggy goo, instead of drops under the tongue, we've actually brought our allergy ingredients into peanut butter, whereby with every lick, small amounts of those ingredients are brought into the mouth. The mouth is goo, juicy, and absorbed directly into the blood, and this is how we begin to build tolerance to those offending allergens.
Okay, so we've just been talking about allergies in pets and how healthy goo can help with that, and the broader topic of different breeds and how they might be more or less affected by allergies and what you could look for. But we're going to go to break, and when we come back, I'll give you a little news on those horses. And we're also going to talk about behavior. Does allergy change behavior in animals? Stay tuned to All Paws Pet Talk Radio with Deb Wolf. With All Paws Pet Talk Radio and me, Deb Wolf, and I want to tell you about the Triple Crown still in sight. All I Have Another is the name of the horse, and he won the Kentucky Derby. He won the Preakness. He is set to perhaps win the Belmont Stakes in 3 weeks, and if he does that, he will be a very lucky and well-taken-care-of three-year-old horse. He'll find himself in the company of Secretariat, Seattle Slough, and Affirmed. And the fact that you probably recognize some of those names tells you how famous and how amazing that would be. The last time this was done was 1978. So this is a colt. This is a very young horse. People are extremely excited, and so am I, because it all began, the rider is riding him, Gutierrez, Mario Gutierrez, the jockey, is also young and began his career here at Hastings Park in Vancouver, at least was here for a while. And so people here are really, really rooting for this beautiful horse, and I mean beautiful. So, yeah, go, 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 I'll Have Another. All right, so we're back with All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and we're interviewing Steve about healthy goo. And he's figured out some things about behavior and allergies. So if you've got this dog that's always scratching and picking at itself, does it act differently? Does it become a different dog? Does it, the very nature of scratching and picking and feeling not so great, change its personality? And maybe does it even change the person who thinks, oh, so sad, I'll give you another biscuit, and I'm thereby giving it the very thing it's allergic to, perhaps. How does this work? Let us know. Is healthy goo going to solve this?
Well, healthy goo is, again, addressing the tolerance that the immune system is fighting against the pollen, dust mites, and molds. And over time, with the licking of our goo-licious peanut butter doggy goo, that tolerance level goes up and the allergy symptoms begin to subside. But we have, again, as mentioned, breeds that are genetically predisposed to higher level of allergies. And when you have a dog that's constantly itching, biting, scratching, we believe that, and there are a number of behavioral pet individuals such as yourself, Deborah, who believe that the ever 24/7 presence of itchy, bitey, scratchy can actually begin to shape the behavior of the animal itself and perhaps move the animal to what we call an irritable aggression. And who doesn't feel a little bit irritable? Who doesn't feel a little bit aggressive when they're just not feeling well?
Well, you know, when I think of a dog in the middle of doing whatever it's doing, it has to sit down and scratch itself. Okay, that's a very submissive posture in the middle of the dog park. And maybe it's not quite ready to do that, or maybe that's not the right position to take at that moment. It would change how it behaves, forcing it to constantly deal with this problem.
Exactly. And how the other dogs observe that animal. You know that in that whole pack mentality that we have with our canines, there is that adage of the strong survive, shall we say, the alpha dog. And if we have the dog beginning to be subjugated, if you will, by allergies, that sends messages to its other pack members that perhaps the pecking order might be modified.
Also, a dog with allergies stinks. I mean, dogs are scent-driven. They can smell him from 100 feet away and think, ooh, that little fella's unwell. I don't want to go near him. And that natural instinct to drive away the sick to keep the pack healthy kicks in, too. So your dog could be getting a pretty raw reception everywhere you go because he smells like bad cheese, you know, or yeast.
Oh, very much
He's
so.
Got yeast all over his skin. Pugs and some of those dogs, they get a lot of yeasty problems. Does your product help with that?
Yes, the yeasty issue is, again, a opportunistic yeast that is present on the skin, ever-present. But because the immune system is generally weakened by the allergies, it takes that opportunity to invade. Where we see mostly yeast, of course, is at the gunky ear level, where the allergens land on the ear's skin, create an irritant, and the ear, in an attempt to remove that irritant, creates a lot of earwax, thinking it can remove it, which it cannot, but it does do one thing. It creates a moist, yeasty petri dish, if you will, for that yeast to invade and set up camp. And then on top of the allergy itch, you have the yeast itself creating toxins that produce itch, and it creates that perfect storm called plain old gunky ear in the dogs. And by
you know what, I see it in the folds, the dogs that have folded skin, like Sharpeys and Pugs, they get real problems with it. It's so bad that the where the skin folds, where they have those cute little wrinkly muzzles, it'll actually tear and break, and they have little cuts all over themselves. It's really a sad, sad thing. And oftentimes it's chronic. The dog is just always dealing with this and always smelling to other dogs a little bit like bread, you know. Not good at the dog park, not what you want. So Healthy Goo can help these dogs, and for sure they'll look it up. Where can they get Healthy Goo, just so we make sure we give out the website before we run out of time here?
Well, thank you, Deborah. DoggyGoo.com, DoggyGoo.com, or our company is called Healthy Goo, and we're in the process, too, of preparing to launch our second product, Goo Gut Rescue, to address the animals whose guts have been compromised by antibiotics in June. But if you type in and click Goo, Doggy Goo, you'll find us. Please visit. And
you know, when you say that, it makes me think of myself or my kids. Whenever we've had to have a course of antibiotics, of course your stomach's upset afterwards, or my kids will have, you know, rashes or things that develop because of the antibiotics. And then after they're all finished, we then have to, there's stuff for kids like little gummy treats that are actually probiotics to restore the gut functioning. And there's little things I've had to do over the years, and lots of yogurt, but you can't even come close to eating enough yogurt to make a dent in it if you've been on a long course of antibiotics. So I think it makes sense. These animals are a lot like us. They're mammals like us. They're built like us. They're smaller than us. They're a lot more like our kids than us. So they're that sensitive. Little 80-pound, 40-pound, 20-pound little mammals, and put them on antibiotics, of course they need something to balance them back, just like we would, right? Makes
You're
sense.
Exactly right.
Well, everybody,
You're
if you've got
right.
an animal with pet allergies, you really ought to consider this. Try and get rid of the allergy instead of treating the symptom. And you may find that all your behavior problems get a lot easier to deal with, too. But if you don't, send your behavior questions to me. Coming up next, we're going to have Darlene Arden on the show. I love to have another dog, cat trainer on with me, and then we go at it and give you your answers. So you'll get two answers for every question you send. Send them in, dog and cat problems. All right, everybody, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, coming back with Deb Wolf and Darlene Arden.
When my dog Buddy was sprayed by a skunk, I didn't like the available options. Harsh peroxide mixes or tomato juice both damage the coat for months, dry out the skin, and can harm their eyes. And most skunk shampoos are just perfumes, also not safe for their eyes. So I invented Deskunkin' Jubilee with safflower oil, all-natural baking soda, mango butter, and other natural ingredients. Safe for your dog's eyes, coat, and skin, and okay if ingested. Works in one shot, money-back guarantee. Go to BuddyR.com, B-U-D-D-Y, the letter R.com.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Let's get together. Hey everybody, welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk. Our next guest is new to All Paws Pet Talk, and his name is Robert Semro, and he is known as the Pawtographer. Welcome to All Paws Pet Talk, Robert.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, can you explain to people what a pawtographer is?
Well, sure. What we're known for and what I'm known for is creating unique, whimsical, fun scenes. But instead of putting people into those scenes, what we do is we put animals in those scenes. And often what we do is we have them dressed in scene-appropriate clothing. So if we've got a fairy garden, we'll dress the dog or ferret or cat, whatever animal happens to come by the studio, in a fairy outfit, and we'll put them in the fairy forest, and thus we have our beautiful fairy portrait.
So this is different than everybody is familiar with William Wegman's photos of his Weimaraners, but they're generally just in a studio shot. So you have scenes and settings with the animals in their costumes.
Right. Yeah, we're a lot different in a couple of different ways than most other photographers that are doing the scenes and the things. And we think they're all brilliant and inspiring in their own ways. One of the things that I set out to do when I started the Pawtographer was to create an heirloom portrait for everyone. All too often when I see those and I go, wow, I'd love to have a photo like that of one of my dogs, you'd call on it, well, we just really do that for licensing purposes or a greeting card company, et cetera. Or maybe it was their own dogs. And I thought, gosh, I own part of a studio. I love my dogs tremendously. Wouldn't it be fun? Let's see if this idea works beyond just one or two dogs. So we opened it up to anybody with dogs. And from there, we've expanded out to anybody with cats and ocelots and pigs and ferrets and, you name it, we've kind of been fortunate to have it at the studio. We have over 300 different scenes, and we like to mix it up. So we'll typically take a scene or two and set them up in our studio. We always do natural portraits as well. It's funny, I have a lot of people who think I only do the scenes, but I do just as many natural portraits. Mm-hmm. But we'll set that scene or two. And, we'll let our fans know these are the scenes we're running over this period of time. And they'll come down. And, most of the time the animals have no problems with the scene or the clothing. But we certainly never force any of the animals to wear an outfit or be in any scene. I've got a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I like to tell people coming to the studio, much like them, if their animals decide they don't want to be a part of it, it's best not to force the issue. We have a safety first policy, so we're never going to do anything to risk the animals. But the other thing too is it's really been interesting. I have almost universally, I'm not sure if my dogs would fit for that, or I'm not sure if my cat would fit for that. And when they get down to the studio, first of all, it's a very big studio, a bit cavernous sometimes. They're just so intrigued by all the visuals. And also all the smells. We've photographed more than 3,000 animals over the last 3 years. So we have really been fortunate to kind of create this place where they come in and they have that sense of familiarity. And we get them into the scene, they're comfortable. And once we've done that, it's just a matter of being patient. And we take that patience to a long level, but it's great, and it's unique, it's fun. The owners of the pets are just beside themselves with happiness and joy. Just they can't believe it, that they're going to have that picture, first of all, but also that their pet just seemed to be, you know, hey, this is kind of cool. So it's a lot of fun, and we do it with a lot of different people.
Well, it's important that it doesn't smell like, you've mentioned all the different animals you have in there, so it doesn't smell like a vet's office. It doesn't smell like photography chemicals, but it's a more welcoming, friendly place. Now, I run a website that people send me photos of their pets all the time, and one of the things I know that you're aware of that I have to caution people all the time is make sure your pet is visible against the background. You know, don't take a picture of your black dog on a navy blue couch with no flash on a dark day. You know, all we're going to get is a little bit of shine, maybe.
Right. Yeah, and that's a great tip. You know, really know the environment. Try and frame that picture so that you're bringing out the animal. You know, it's one of the challenges we have. We may love to create these fantastic scenes, but I have to tell you, the most important thing in any picture I take is always the animal. And so that's great advice, to make sure they're going to stand out, because in the end, that's what we want from that photo. You know, it's nice to add in all the cute things and have something that really is different than every other photo. But in the end, it all comes down to, I really want to see that animal. I want to capture their eyes. I want to see their spirit. Great advice.
And do you have, I'm wondering, as a person who's taken photos of animals, and like I said, I get, you know, we do dogoftheday.com, catoftheday.com, and petoftheday.com, and I often have to write back to people who submit a photo and say, can you please, you know, take a picture of your cat facing the camera? So do you have a repertoire of silly noises you make that help the animal turn toward you?
Absolutely. In fact, we call ourselves animal noise experts. You know, it's the other thing that's interesting about animal noises is they become desensitized to noises pretty quickly. So you have to vary them up, or they're just not captured by them. And it's funny because I tell people it only takes us a millisecond to get the picture. It may take 3 or 4 minutes, though, to get their attention as they're looking around at the environment and the smells and whatnot. So, but yeah, we do a lot of different techniques and tricks to grab their attention. And it's a hoot. I mean, there's no other way to say it. It's a lot of fun, and it's a memorable experience for everybody involved.
So you mentioned all the different animals you've done. So you would have costumes that would fit, say, a St. Bernard as well as a little tiny miniature pincher.
We have over 2,000 different outfits for animals. From the smallest of small, I photographed a 1-pound, 1-ounce dog, all the way on up to, we did the Western Regional Great Dane Champion, who might as well have been the size of a horse. And we had some great outfits for that dog. It's a lot of fun. I typically see a lot of smaller animals, but I really love the big animals because they really pop, as we were just discussing, in the scenes, and they stand out. So, yeah, we try and accommodate everything. I've actually done horses in some of the outfits, so we really, it's a lot of fun. I love the challenge.
Now, what's the largest animal you've ever photographed?
Probably would be the horses. The horses are definitely there. I did an elephant that had its own costume, but we did that not in our studio. We did that out in the field. Our studio is large, but I felt the elephant would be more comfortable outdoors. So that's our size range there, if you will.
And so what pets do you have of your own?
I have, this will sound a little strange, but I have two wonderful dogs that we rescued from local shelters. And then I have three jellyfish.
Oh, cool. Though I suppose they probably don't wear costumes very well.
The jellyfish don't. And I must admit, I haven't tried. But the irony is people ask me all the time when they come to our studio, you know, we've got just pictures galore up of all the different things that we've done. And they'll say, which ones are your dogs? And I always point to the two pictures that have no scene, no costume. My dogs are not fans of what I do in terms of participating. but they love to be down at the studio, but the minute they see an outfit coming out, they kind of look at me, shake their head, and say, no, no, no.
Yes, I was thinking of my rabbit who is now at the Rainbow Bridge, but she would not have been a fan of costumes. You might be able to put her in the scene if you put some parsley down for her to nibble on, but the minute you tried to put an outfit on her, she would exit the scene, stage left or right, whichever was fastest. Robert, what is your website? We're almost out of time here.
No problem. The website is thepawtographer.com.
And so it's PAWTOGRAPHER.com, thepawtographer.com. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today. And I hope people can go to your website and see some of those photos and maybe get inspired to take some pictures of their own pets as well or come down to your place.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being with us, Robert. And we'll be right back with more All Paws Pet Talk.
Hello, we're back with Deb Wolf on All Paws Pet Talk Radio and my friend and colleague and author of many books, including an award-winning one she just came out with on cats, Darlene Arden. Welcome to the show, Darlene.
Thank you, Deb. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm a little bit intimidated by this page of pet questions we have to deal with. You're lucky you haven't seen it yet. Lots of bad dogs and cats wanting our attention, Darlene.
Oh, I don't think they're bad. I think they're misunderstood.
Are you ready for it today?
I'm ready.
Okay. So what's the weather like over there? Are you having a nice day? We're having sunshine here.
Oh, we're having pouring rain, damp, cold, raw, gray.
Oh, okay.
Would you like some rain?
Well, now I feel bad, but most of the time we've got rain in the rainforest. So when it's sunny, kind of have to celebrate it.
Yeah, we had a lovely weekend, and I enjoyed every minute of the sunshine. Had the sunroof open on my car and really enjoyed it.
Nice. Okay, so here's our first one. This is a cat one. I think I'll go back and forth. Should I go back and forth,
okay,
or should we do a whole set of cats and then a whole set of dogs? What do you feel like?
Whatever you want. It's your show.
Okay, well, we'll just see how it goes. The first one is, there's a cat. The lady writes in, and this is what I paraphrased it down to. There's a cat, calico cat, little bit skittish, doesn't really like to be pet, but it follows them around, and it sort of sits staring at them, like when the woman's in the bath or when she's cooking, with one paw slightly raised off the ground. She says if she tries to pet it or talk to it or even looks at it, it runs off. Why is it doing this?
Because the cat is obviously has been a house pet and wants the attention but is a little bit afraid. And petting a strange cat is not the way to make friends. What you do is hold your hand down in a fist and point your finger out and let the cat sniff it as they would go nose to nose with another cat. Now, does she know if this cat is owned?
It's her cat.
It's her cat.
No, it's her cat. She's writing in about her own cat.
Sounds like she's writing about somebody else's cat.
It's her cat. Because she has a few cats, and this is the only one that isn't affectionate and friendly and loving, and they'd sort of given up on it. But lately, it follows them around and sits there.
The cat obviously wants affection. She's following them around. She needs to put one finger out and let the cat sniff her forefinger. That's the way cats would greet each other. She can sit and flip food at the cat, like little treats or little pieces of kibble. Just casually do that, so the cat will approach. Also, she can take an interactive toy and make a definite point of playing with this cat 2 or 3 times a day. And that should help solidify the bond. It takes time sometimes for some kitties, but they come around.
Okay. All right. So we have another one. Now, this is more the usual stuff I get. Okay. My first cat is attacking my already been here for years, but second cat. And so what do we do?
Well, first
so
of
the
all,
one that's attacking is smaller and very old, and it just, you know, and then goes, because she takes a bunch of R's, all the way across the page to show the noise this older cat is making. Big, it's a black cat. It's tiny and skinny and old, but it puffs itself out, and then it just takes like a run at the other cat. The other cat is huge, confident, much younger, gets scared, though. Sometimes fights back, sometimes moves on. Nobody's ever gotten actually bit, but she says she does find bite marks on the big one. So I think the older one is biting the big one, and the big one's taking it. I think he's just a really soft-natured cat, or maybe because he grew up as a kitten in that house, he doesn't realize the size difference, because that can happen with animals, you know? If
absolutely.
A puppy grows up with a big
no
dog dominating it. Pardon me?
They have no idea of their own size.
Mm-hmm.
They just know what they
see. So he may indeed be afraid of this old lady.
He may well be, because he may have tried to challenge her for top cat in the house, and she's not about to give it up. Good for her. So
right.
I would, first of all, I would make sure the cats were both healthy, so that visits are always in order to be sure it's not a behavior problem. I would make sure that good things happen for both cats when they're in the same room, that there's some sort of play going on together with interactive cat toys. That they were treats.
Well, she put later, I'll tell you what she put later in her email. When I feed them canned food, which they both love, they're the only cats in my house that love canned food. When I feed them canned food, they eat peacefully side by side in a double dish. That's interesting, I thought.
Mealtime is peacetime for cats. They really will, you know, it's a good way to introduce cats. As when you start your introductions after you've kept them separated, when you bring in a new cat, is to feed them on opposite sides of the door and then feed them side by side, because they're not going to fight if they're enjoying the meal. That becomes a very social time. So that's a good way to introduce cats to each other. So that doesn't surprise me in the least that mealtime is
well, so, okay, so she is doing quite a few things right, it sounds like.
She is. She just needs to concentrate on making good things happen when both cats are in the room together and getting them engaged with an interactive toy will go a long way towards peace in the house.
But what does she do if there is, you know, she's sitting there, she's the story she tells, she's preparing lunch for the kids, and all of a sudden this, and the cat flies across the room, and the other one screams, and what should she do in those situations?
What she has
been doing is breaking it up and shooing them away from each other.
I would try and interrupt her. I would try calling the cat and having it do something. I would train it. You know, we've discussed this before. Cat training is a wonderful thing. Clicker training, teaching the cats to sit, teaching the cats to do things that you would normally think of training a dog to do. Cats can learn to do that. And that way, when you have that sort of situation, you can give them an alternative behavior to perform.
Yeah, just like when you're walking your dog and it sees a squirrel and you don't want it to run across the street, you give a little tug on the leash, and instead of being yanked because it forgets it's on the leash, you say heel, and it remembers what it's supposed to be doing, because you've already drilled heel at a time when there wasn't a squirrel. That's the kind of thing we're talking about with the cat. If the cat already knows its name, knows how to come, well, you can call it when there's problems, and it will come. And then
exactly.
When it comes, you can give it that bit of wet cat food, and you don't have to be angry with it. So, okay, well, we're almost out of time with the cat problems. We're going to have to leave one for another show, because I think when we get back, we'll be talking on the dog side. But before we go, Darlene, if people want to know how to train their cat, how to fix their cat problems, or they just want to read about anything cat from an award-winning book by you, where can they get your book and tell them all about it just before we go to break?
They can buy The Complete Cat's Meow at any bookstore, brick and mortar, or online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, They can go to my website, www.darlenearden.com, and that will connect directly over to the book at Amazon and to my dog books as well.
All right. Well, everybody, stay tuned to Alpaz Pet Talk Radio. We'll be back solving your dog problems, and the first one we're going to tackle is a dog who seems to want to chase seals in the ocean. Will he swim out to sea? Can the people let him keep doing this? Is this dangerous? They want to know. Okay, we'll be back with Alpaz Pet Talk Radio in Devil.
When my dog Buddy was sprayed by a skunk, I didn't like the available options. Harsh peroxide mixes or tomato juice both damage the coat for months, dry out the skin, and can harm their eyes. And most skunk shampoos are just perfumes, also not safe for their eyes. So I invented Deskunkin' Jubilee with safflower oil, all-natural baking soda, mango butter, and other natural ingredients. Safe for your dog's eyes, coat, and skin, and okay if ingested. Works in one shot, money-back guarantee. Go to BuddyR.com, B-U-D-D-Y, the letter R.com.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
Pookie's, where your pet's nutrition is our mission. At Pookie's Pet Nutrition and Bowwell Bakery, we strive to provide a holistic approach to pet care with the greatest variety and highest quality of healthful foods, treats, and supplements for your pets since 1999. So let our experienced and knowledgeable staff help you answer your questions and choose the right food for your pet. They will take the time to listen to your concerns. At Pookie's Pet Nutrition and Bowwell Bakery, celebrate special occasions with a custom cake or cookies baked right on the premises in two locations, Winter Park and Ocoee. Pookie's, the largest independent pet store in the Orlando area. Custom birthday cakes, gift baskets, raw foods, supplements, and featuring home delivery in two locations, Winter Park and Ocoee. Call 407-622-PETS. Pookie's, committed to supporting local rescue groups and adoption efforts. Check it out online at pookiesbowwellbakery.com. Pookie's, where your pet's nutrition is our mission. 407-622-PETS.
Squeaky deaky, I love my squeaky toy. Squeaky deaky, it makes me jump for joy.
Hello, we're back with Alpaz Pet Talk Radio and Deb Wolf and my guest Darlene Arden. And you know what, Darlene, I know I said I was going to go walking on the dog side now, but before we do, one more cat problem. Because I love the way this reflects our kind of modern life. There's a grandma from another country, another world, another time, living in a house. It's a triple-generation family situation. And the lady, this older lady, shuffles when she walks. Well, they have a cat. And the cat likes to chase the shuffling slippers. And so grandma keeps putting the cat outside when the cat chases her because she thinks animals belong outside. And the family that spent a lot of money on the cat and loves the cat and doesn't want it outside, doesn't want it to be coyote food, is getting distraught over this. So they sent us an email. How can they teach their cat to stop attacking shuffling grandma's slippers?
We're back to clicker training.
And this is a good one, though. You can just picture poor grandma, huh?
a poor grandma and poor kitty being thrown out for just being playful. So it's kind of a lose-lose.
Yes, why isn't anybody playing with the cat so it doesn't care what grandma's up to, really?
Exactly. Why do we need a lose-lose when we can have a win-win? They need to spend a lot more time playing with the cat. They need to teach grandma to interact positively with the cat. And they need to teach the cat to go to her place when they tell her to. There's a wonderful video at YouTube. If you go to YouTube and put in the words ankle attack, there's an award-winning video that shows you exactly how to clicker train your cat not to attack ankles, and that's with a kitten. Much easier. You're going to teach your cat to go to her place so she won't attack shuffling slippers.
Right.
I kind of had this problem with, you know, and it was fine. I was very lucky. I brought in an adult cat, and my mother walked with a cane and then with a walker. And I was very lucky that there was no sense of, oh, I should chase that. It was kind of, oh, that's nice. So your cat can reach the point of, oh, that's nice. With a little bit
but
of
the
training.
Cat will have to be entertained some other way. If nobody's entertaining this cat, then
no,
and that's
people,
the only
even
game
though people
going.
Love the cats,
it's going to be really tempting for
them,
and poor grandma's just the only game gone.
Well, they don't understand. Most people think they love their cats, and I'm sure they do in a certain respect, but they don't understand the cats need environmental enrichment. They need to be entertained. They need to be played with. They need to have interesting toys around that they can play with on their own. Scratching posts in different rooms or the flat cardboard scratchers. You can always, those are very inexpensive and you can put them into rooms. But engaging your cat in play, whether with an interactive toy, which is always good, or a rousing game of fetch, which many cats like, there's lots of ways to play with your cat. Just do it.
Well, let's go on to the doggy side now and talk about our dog problem here. This lady's dog, Golden Retriever, Chesapeake Bay Retriever Cross, she has a bunch of dogs. They go a lot on the boat, and when they're on the boat going through the Gulf Islands, I'm so jealous. I want to say, you know what, lady, you need a private lesson. You need me to come on the boat through the Gulf Islands helping you train your dog. So if you're out there, I'd be interested in a swap. But, okay, so she's got these three dogs on the boat, and they go swimming and playing, and sometimes this one, the Chesapeake Bay Golden Cross, sees the seals and goes off and plays with them. And she's wondering, is this safe? Is it possible he'll just follow them away? And is it dangerous? And it's a kind of interesting question. What do you think?
It is an interesting question. I mean, apparently so far the dog's lucked out if she still has the dog and can ask the question. Seals are very dog-like in their play, and they sort of bark. So I find it interesting that the dog was attracted to them for play. I don't know why the other two dogs
are
in the water playing with this
before.
Dog.
I've had the experience of diving off a boat and having the seal mimic what I'm doing underwater or taunt me or take a toy I have and make off with it or play with it the same way we were, like a frisbee or a ball.
They're
I've
very
seen some
playful.
Of this stuff happen. Yeah, but I've also heard there was a news article maybe 2 years ago of a seal that actually bit a child. So they're not always...
well, they're not
they are wild animals, and you know, so it's a big question. But I think, as you say, if it's been okay so far, I think you're probably okay to continue.
So far,
it.
They're fine. I would encourage the other dogs to play. I would interact more with the dog, and I would be darn sure I had a really good recall on that dog, so you can call it back. That no matter what distracts it, the dog's going to come back.
Yeah,
to you.
And I would probably introduce a whistle, too, so that it can be heard underwater maybe more easily and that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So the dog is always really
that's
responsive. You might even want
to
put a long lead on him and do recall out of water a lot to the boat. And make sure you've got a ramp so getting in and out is not a big deal. It's easy. And, wow, I hope you take some video and send it to me. So that's a great, great question. Okay, we have another, let's see this one. A bunch of dog ones. Okay. Dog can jump into the car, but won't. So she says her dog jumps higher when it's playing and jumps into other people's cars or when with other people. But when it's her, the dog just acts like big baby and expects to be lifted into the car. And because of that, it doesn't get to go play fetch in the ocean very much because she can't get in the car. What should she do?
It sounds like she spoiled this dog when it was a puppy and it never learned that it could do for itself. It's not generalized, isn't it? Well, because the dog's generalized, hasn't generalized the behavior to her car, but only to other people's cars, which I find very funny. But it's not so funny when you're dealing with it. I would strongly suggest she work with this dog on getting into the car and out of the car using treats, using clicker training. And if push comes to shove, buy a ramp. But stop picking up the dog and putting it in the car. Don't get so disgusted that the dog wins this one.
I think I might add to that, you're not talking about a two-pound chihuahua. No, no, it's a big dog. I think I might add to that to get one of these people that she jumps into the car for so easily to come with you. And so you're not trying to get her to both adjust to your car and to you at the same time. She's jumping into your car for him, the guy she jumps into his car for all the time.
That's an excellent idea.
Now she's jumping into your car.
She'll still do it after he goes away.
Well, yeah, and then you got to do it with him there, and maybe you go to the beach with him a bunch of times. So you get her into a new habit of jumping into your car somehow.
Exactly.
And then you have him maybe on speed dial just in case. It is funny. Okay, so now we switch over. We have a standard poodle who's being misunderstood. Standard poodle misunderstood, loves people, loves to bring toys to the door, but it mouths people's wrists. Oh, we hardly have any time left, darling. How quickly do you train a dog to stop grabbing your wrists with its mouth, even in affection?
Oh, I would be working really hard with toys. Everything has to replace any portion of your anatomy with the toy and make it positive when the dog chooses the toy and turn away from the dog when he tries to choose any portion of your anatomy.
Okay, so boarding when he's rude, fun when he's good. Get your toy, good boy. All right, everybody, that was Darlene Arden and Bev Wolf. We're out of time with All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Talk to you next week. Be good to your animals.
Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.